Okay, welcome to this session. This session is Apache Stack-based infrastructure monitoring and analytics in Big Telco. My name is Jonghyuk Lee. First, let me introduce myself. I'm an architect and working at Software R&D Center of SK Telecom, which is the largest mobile carrier in South Korea. And I'm leading development of T-Core, which is a SK Telecom's infrastructure monitoring and analytics platform for data center and mobile networks. Before joining SK Telecom, I worked at IBM Korea Lab as a senior architect, and my main field is information design and solution architecturing, especially for data processing and management system. And here is today's agenda. First, I'll briefly introduce about telco infrastructure, what's the meaning of monitoring and analytics in this industry. And I'll share our approach for real-time processing and storing and querying timeshare data, as well as several issues we faced during our implementation of T-Core. The last section will be our approach in analytics and real-time inferencing area. So, communication on mobile network uses completely different method from the base. As a result, traditional way of monitoring on mobile network shows quite different method and view from IT world. So, but those two worlds are converging with the evolution of each of the industries, and IT technology expands their area in telco network. As a result, requirements on this part also changes. So, as I mentioned before, SK Telecom is the largest mobile carrier in South Korea and has more than 30 million subscribers with more than 50% of market share as of September 27th and 17th. Its business area is now limited to mobile network operation and covers Internet of Things, car navigation service, auto driving, AI speaker, music and movie streaming services, and many others. If I say about big data in our company, we are running several 10,000 nodes, hub clusters, 100 plus Kafka clusters, many Druid and Spark clusters, and we also built several enterprise-wide data pipelines with many Apache Hadoop Echo softwares and actively expanding size of clusters for various purposes. Let me describe the shape of telco infrastructure a little for help you understanding about our requirement. The diagram in those slides represent a simplified architecture of 4G LTE infrastructure. Usually key mode, which is located at the left side of the slide, means cell phones or mobile devices you are using. And this user equipment communicate with ENB or Evolve Node B. MME, which stands for Mobile Management Entity, manages user equipment connected to ENB. Radio wave captured by ENB transferred to serving gateway and passed to packet data network gateway. And I think you may simply think that a range from user equipment to P gateway is kind of telco world, and the last part is a kind of IT world. So P gateway assigns IP addresses to each of mobile devices and transform radio waves form of communication to user TCP IP package so that it can be dealt as a part of IT network. There are also two support systems, type of support system, business support systems and operation support system. The operation support system is for the operation of telecommunication network, like to support and check the status of network equipment and line status as well, and including asset management functionalities. And business support system is for doing all things related to mobile network businesses like billings and checking the usage of data packet, etc. Terms and diagram might not be familiar with most of you, but it's okay to think the left side of the P-gateway is a tech world and right side is an IT world. And both support system is also a part of IT world. And now, 5G is coming in telco industry. There are many fantastic stories when people talk about 5G, which is the next generation telecommunication network and technology. But it can be summarized in one word, virtualization, if we see this technology in infrastructure perspective. All of the telco equipment I mentioned on previous slide will be learned in a virtualized form, not as a hardware anymore, in 5G infrastructure. Infrastructure softwares like Cloud Stack or Kubernetes or OpenStack will be doing an important role for running those virtualized networks. Mobile edge computing is another huge pillar of 5G. And many service providers or content providers will use this platform by deploying their edge applications and data to provide low latency services to end users. So telco infrastructure monitoring is technically the same with IT infrastructure monitoring. It's just there are some differences on what to monitor. And telco monitoring sometimes requires consideration of relationship between telco equipment or between telco equipment and IT infrastructure. So I think there's not much differences, but telco monitoring is just somewhat specialized for this domain. Monitoring on telco infrastructure are including following items. The first item is virtualized network function and virtualized EMS, which manages each of VNFs. Apps. Those are one of the most important parts in 5G situation. The second one is a NFV infrastructure, which is running VNFs and EMS on it. Cloud Stacks, OpenStack, Kubernetes, or other infrastructure softwares can be deployed to perform this role. So, surely it includes several data centers and its facilities, as well as OSS and BSS systems. And in case of analytics, I think it's just beginning in this area. Topics like predictive maintenance and anomaly detection, which is already common in other areas, is just start to show shown in this area, where fast movers like Google, Amazon, Facebook already published several articles and deployed some models on their infrastructure, but they are only focusing on IT infrastructure. Most of analytics in telco infra monitoring is focused on network anomaly detection, resource engineering, and network bandwidth management to enhance or keep their service level high enough to provide better service to customers. We at SK Telecom also covers most of the items mentioned in this slide, and my team covers some of them. This is our simplified architecture emphasizing on monitoring and analytics. And the data gathered from agents ingested to message queue and transformed, filtered, and checked by real-time data processing application. As a result, data will be stored to time series database or log data store by dedicated syncers to each of data form. Coordinator process covers every processes to collaborate efficiently, and some of the master data and metadata is cached on in-memory data store for performance purpose, while all is stored on repository database. Real-time and stored data is provided to user interface or other servers by the request through API server. And analytics platform is used to perform analysis on stored data and training of model. Those models derived from this platform will be applied on real-time data processing module for real-time inferencing. This is our software stack. Software stacks we are using, most of them are, I think, already well known, and you are using it, or at least you heard the name of it, I think. Spark is supplied on only real-time processing layer and not on data platform, because it's our data scientist's opinion that Spark doesn't support enough deep learning model we are interested in than TensorFlow or Keras. We use Apache Spark as a message queue and Redis as an in-memory data store. Also, we store log on Elasticsearch and metrics on OpenTSDB with HBase backend. Analytics platform is not a fully programmed one, and just type of platform providing all tools like R, Keras, and TensorFlow, all of the tools required by our data scientists. We are on our way on proof of concept of applying a trained anomaly detection model on real-time inferencing engine with Spark structured streaming without shutdown of application, and expected to be completed within short period. And Zookeeper is coordinating every processes. So now we're going to talk about real-time processing of monitoring data. This is the whole flow of our real-time data processing flow. First, we read all the data from Kafka and map all data to internal structure. Meanwhile, we enrich some attributes not provided by target server for internal filtering, grouping, and alarm detection. After enrichment, we fill out our data. We filter out our data, which is not specified as a collection target. One of the reasons to remove wrongly captured data, in case of some target servers, we don't have direct control or monitoring agent. So there are metrics or logs we didn't want to handle, and we filter out them in this step. Another role of this step is to filter out logical duplication of metrics. In case of virtual machines, agents could capture system metrics in two different ways. The first way is to capture directly from agent which is installed inside a virtual machine, and the other way is capture from agent installed on host OS via APIs or plugins like Leopard plugin. As we don't need both of the metrics, we just filter out one of them by user requirement. After filtering out, all data will be passed and to syncer and will be synced to Kafka for storing. And at the same time, we filter part of the data which is related to alarm detection. And union all of them to check alarm condition satisfaction. We union streams to check alarm condition containing both metrics and logs. Those two different data is gathered in two different topics, which is metrics and logs. So we need to union them for checking alarm condition with, for example, CPU usage is larger than 90%, and there is a syslog message containing text like error. After group by on union message with host ID, we check whether data is satisfying alarm condition or not, and check consecutive count for some alarms containing those conditions like alert when CPU usage is larger than 90% consecutively three times or so. Finally, we send detected alarm to appropriate API server to send situation information to data center operators via Slack or MMS or so. The first thing we consider for the implementation of real-time data processing flow is to choose appropriate engine or framework for our situation. I think And this is, those are stream processing frameworks we consider from the beginning of our development. Well, I don't want to mention about process and concept of each framework here, because I think that all software sets is on places to be a stop layer. Since we started with Spark streaming, but checked out some storm sampling also and gear pump as well. In case of us, the proposal of our solution is monitor every of telco and IT data centers. Is especially dedicated to the operation of our telco network. So our condition were like follows. The first one is to one solution to cover both the real-time processing and batch processing in the same manner. And we also wanted scalability to cover every monitoring data gathered from regional hub data centers widely spread in our country. Also, we wanted a large expert pool in development and operation perspective so that we can easily set up our team in a short period, while low entry barrier so that our developer can work well with the framework in a short period. We thought that the Spark streaming is the best fit for us. From now on, I will share several issues we faced during our implementation with Spark streaming. I think our real-time processing of monitoring data is not kind of unique requirement for Spark streaming implementation. So I think it's going to be helpful by just sharing our architecture or implementation issues might be helpful for all who has planned for similar system implementation. Surely there were so many issues for us, like always, and here's the list of issues. I think it might be helpful for you. The first issue is about the case implementing Kafka integration with a direct approach provided by Spark Streaming when there are too many number of Kafka topic partitions than needed. And the second one is about gathering data from multiple Kafka brokers. Multiple topics on single Kafka broker, but from multiple Kafka brokers. And the next is applying changes on master data and or metadata to Spark streaming application without shutting down them. And the final one is a way of checking along condition with Spark's microbatch approach. Okay. Now let's start from the first case. Well, as I mentioned on previous slide, the first issue about the case implementing Kafka integration with direct approach provided by Spark Streaming when there are too many number of partitions than needed. Before I'm talking about our experience, I think it would be better to explain about two different way of Kafka integrations provided by Apache Spark Streaming. And the first way is a receiver-based approach, and it's using Spark Streaming's Kafka receiver implementation with high-level Kafka API. So as you can see on the left side of the slide, receiver itself is running on one of the Spark executor, and Kafka offsets are stored in ZooKeeper. I think you know that it's a typical approach of Kafka consumer using Kafka level using high level API. The data read from Kafka are stored on executor memory and workload log like HDFS or so. When they're needed to recover from system failure, Spark streaming application read unprocessed data from WAR first and process them and continuous reading from Kafka after the completion of process on those data read from WAR. One problem of this approach is that there's a possibility that some part of the data can be processed twice. If a failure on the situation, When the offset data is not updated to ZooKeeper after storing storing read message to war. It is because of inconsistency between Spark streaming application and Kafka, and Kafka thinks some part of data is not read because offset data is not updated. Spark delivered this second way of integration, Kafka integration. The second way, which is you can see at the right side of the slide, is direct approach. And it is suggested to cover the problems of receiver-based approach. Instead of receiver read data from Kafka, driver assigns Spark tasks which Kafka offset range information to read specific range of Kafka topic partitions. So executors then launch those tasks to read and process assigned Kafka topic partitions. Direct approach uses other API which is not used by receiver-based approach, and this API provides offset range of topic partition parameter, so users can directly specify where to read from. So executors don't need to store offset data on ZooKeeper nor store consumed data on Word anymore for later use because data can be read directly from Kafka again when needed. By managing and storing those offset data in Spark application, they just removed possibility of offset inconsistency and possibility of two-time processing on same data. Just for your information, receiver-based approach is provided by Spark Streaming Kafka 0.8 package, which is deprecated from Spark version 2.3.0. So if you plan to implement from the beginning, maybe you will not use a receiver-based approach anymore. But receiver-based approach is actually the first Spark streaming provided way of Kafka integration. And I guess this approach might be widely used already. Yeah. We are using direct approach from the beginning of development. And again, the first issue about the case implementing Kafka integration with direct approach with too many number of partitions. As I mentioned at the end of previous slide, we are using direct approach, and I'm afraid some of you don't have knowledge of Spark, but I think explaining about Spark requires some time, and there were already many, several sessions explaining about it, so I want to just go into the case itself. When using direct approach, Spark Streaming maps each of Kafka topic partition to one RDD partition, and it means that one Spark task is assigned to read and process each of Kafka topic partition. If you don't set spark.task.cpu configuration, the default value is 1, and it means that one Spark task uses one CPU core. While on our development and test page, or case of our early production deployment, we can use our own monitoring agent and configure Kafka brokers as well, so that we can decide number of partitions for related topics. It is usually optimized to less than 10, and there was no problem at all at the moment. So it happens at the moment, and one of our data center requested to monitor a group of servers, and that was a commercial OpenStack cluster. And it has its own agent and API server together monitoring data from target servers and ingest it to its own Kafka broker. Our resource available was two master nodes and two worker nodes, each of which has 48 cores with hyper-threading enabled, but As we should deploy Elasticsearch, HBase, OpenTSDB, Redis, and all other software components, as well as our developed applications. We could just assign only 18 cores for each of Spark worker to our to Spark clusters. Regarding data sources, I mean Kafka brokers, we have two topics on the Kafka cluster. One of them is metrics topic, which provides metrics gathered from target OpenStack cluster, and the other is a logs topic, which provides logs. There was a 64 partition on metrics topic and 90 partition on log topic, which was too many. It means that we need to run 154 Spark tasks to read and process those data. It means that we need 154 cores to complete all of those tasks. And as I explained, 36 cores are our available cores for Spark applications, but there were several other Spark streaming applications running on this Spark cluster as well. And we assigned 20 cores for this Spark streaming job by setting spark.cores.max as 20. It means that the maximum number of Spark tasks that can be run simultaneously is 20. And it might not be a problem if it is our usual case with number of Kafka topic partition less than 10. So we need to solve this 154 tasks at a micro-batch situation. And frankly, at the moment, we didn't realize the situation at all. We just began with this Spark streaming, and we don't have enough experience to think about the result of applying this without solving this partition number problem. And just we developed to add those Kafka brokers and topics in our coverage by just adding those new Kafka brokers and topics information to in our configuration file. So we just imagine that everything will be completed without much work or problem. And yeah, and as a result, as you all can imagine, all micro batches were slowing down. You can test it with simple code as well. The image at the right side of the slide is a event timeline graph provided by Spark application user interface for the case of consuming Kafka topic of 100 partitions with four Spark workers, each of which has four cores and a Spark application starting with one core for one executor and eight cores maximum for application. As you can see on the timeline graph, there are 100 small tasks running on eight executors, task by task, eight tasks simultaneously, reading data from each of the assigned Kafka topic partition. This approach is not bad at all, I think. Actually, it is a good approach if we consider that this kind of job needs parallelism. The problem in this situation is that there was no consideration about data incoming to each partition and level of parallelism at all during our implementation. And if we think about the case when each of task has a long deserialization and serialization time, or each of task has many things to perform, it means that total execution time of those tasks cannot but longer. So if everything can be completed in a short time, you don't need to do anything with this situation. But if it's not the case, you should decrease the number of total tasks by enhancing performance, I mean decrease processing time of microbatch. Spark provides two methods to adjust number of RDD partitions. Collis and repartition is them. Actually, Collis is another version of repartition, and actually it's a repartition without shuffle operation. So with repartition 10 or Collis 10, you can change the number of RDD partition to 10 and change the number of Spark tasks to run on the job. But you should also consider that even in that situation, the fact that the number of topic partition is still 100, and it is not changed at all. Just number of tasks will be changed. So one task will consume 10 Kafka partitions, and still we have some problems with that. Running parallel job shows best performance when all partitions are well balanced. So you need to check the distribution of data between partitions to optimize the number of RDD partitions, which method to use, colist or repartition. Not only spec streaming, structured streaming also uses direct approach for Kafka integration, as I mentioned at the previous slide. So you should think about this topic as one of important tuning factor when you implement Kafka integration with Spark, especially with small micro batch interval like 1 second or so. Yeah, and the second issue is somewhat similar but different with the previous one. When you are working with Spark streaming and Kafka integration, you will easily face situations that you should consume from multiple Kafka brokers. In case of us, this happens when we want to monitor several servers spread on different data centers or network zones, so that we should set up dedicated Kafka brokers for each of data centers or network zones. The OpenStack case, which I mentioned on previous issue, is also one of the cases that OpenStack cluster has its own Kafka brokers. I think there could be many approaches to handle this case with Spark streaming, but I want to emphasize two topics to consider when you decide your own way. The first thing is to consider. The first thing to consider is that you should consider whether you will assign single Spark streaming application to consume from all of Kafka brokers, or assign a dedicated application to each of topic or Kafka broker, to so that each application can focus on only single topic or Kafka broker assigned. Surely, there's no only one right answer for this question. Single application approach means one application consumes from every Kafka broker. And in this case, it's very simple to implement, but hard to optimize resource allocation for Spark clusters. As I mentioned on previous topic, we can set maximum value for each of worker nodes to use, and can also configure application how many resources among Spark cluster resource can use, but message route can be different from each of Kafka topics, as well as size of each message, distribution on topic partition, shape of data, and operations requested to perform on data might be different. So it's really hard to optimize the use of resource for the Spark application. And the number of Kafka topic partition, which I mentioned on previous issue, is also another thing to consider as well. And if you are using Spark streaming, you can only set single interval for all of your micro batch in the application. And it means that you have same interval setting for all of Kafka brokers. And if you want to have different intervals on each of Kafka brokers, you should set Spark to allow multiple contexts and create multiple Spark streaming contexts for each of streaming streams or interval. And this can be handled in a different way with structured streaming. In case of dedicated application, dedicated application means you implement applications dedicated to each of Kafka topic, and if it's a case, your data processing flow can be separated. This approach can be one option to consider, but there are several cons on the approach. It is not efficient than single application approaches. Most of the operations performed to data is usually similar or identical, except Kafka consuming part. And you should optimize resource configuration for each of the application, and this is also a huge work. And the last thing to mention about this approach is that it is not possible to apply this situation if there's a correlation or on multiple topic data. And the second thing to consider is that whether there is requirement for dynamic resource change or not, dynamic source change or not. There are many data centers where no downtime is required as well as low latency. And its nature of data center monitoring, as most of data centers has their own service level agreement to their users and should notify their users about system trouble situation. We also have a test item for our 5G infrastructure monitoring regarding end-to-end latency from occurrence of system trouble and alarm notification, and even 5 seconds was not acceptable for them. So with this requirement, you should design an architecture to dynamically add to or remove Kafka sources without restart. Well, at least you should implement an application that can be restarted in a short time with new configuration applied. And our approach on this consideration is like this. We applied part of our decision on implementation while other part on deployments. First, we implemented our application can consume from multiple topics from multiple Kafka brokers, but deployed in some different way. One of the reasons of this implementation is that there was a correlation alarm requirement so that we should merge data from multiple Kafka topics or multiple Kafka brokers to detect those kind of alarm situation. But for some reason, we decided to reduce the influence between applications and remove single point of failure and deploy it in a manner that each of application is assigned to multiple topics on single Kafka broker. One of the reason is that usually topics on single Kafka broker is dedicated to same target data center or services or network zone and show similar ingestion patterns and have same requirements like interfers and alarm detections or so. With this approach, we could achieve benefits of both single and dedicated application approaches and could optimize our configuration to meet SLA. This is the part of our source code showing the real-time data processing flow, which I introduced at the beginning of this session. You can see this code at the slide, which you can download from the site. So I will pass this part. And the next item we were working on was how we can apply data changes to running Spark streaming application efficiently. In reality, there are so many changes happening on data center equipment, servers and switches, monitoring policy and processing rule as well. So we always need those informations keep updated so that every data captured should be processed properly. We needed to find the efficient way to propagate those information to every of Spark streaming tasks. Our initial implementation was to use ZooKeeper as an in-memory data propagation gateway. All data will be stored, was stored in ZooKeeper, and all applications using this information subscribe to ZooKeeper to get notification of data change situation. When application receives notification, Spark streaming application load changes data from ZooKeeper and updated internal variable using broadcast or so. So there was no problem at the beginning, but when the case they need many updates. I mean, there was many changes on source. Each of the application needs too many synchronization with ZooKeeper. So that was the problem of our first approach. We changed our architecture so that change can be applied as much as possible in one time. But as we couldn't find a way, with the data stored on ZooKeeper, we decided to change the role of ZooKeeper and let ZooKeeper only has an information of whether there was a change on data or not. So whether there were changes on one alarm or 100 alarms, Spark streaming app just receives notification once telling that there was some change in data. We also unified our data accessing point to MySQL to remove data inconsistency between ZooKeeper and Spark streaming application. And we changed our application read all of data from MySQL when triggered, and could stop comparing data within those two systems. We also could reduce data loading time, and it was faster than reading from ZooKeeper. I think one of the reasons is that we changed the implementation to read and update all of the rules in one time. Now we are moving to Spark structured streaming for some reason. Actually, we wanted to do that from the time when it was first announced, but should wait for a while for a release of stable version. With this change, we were thinking about which is the best way to implement propagation of those changes to structured streaming. We considered three different way for this. The first one is to read directly from Redis. Every time we are performing tests of microbatch. In this case, we don't need to propagate those changes to each of the Spark executor. The second way is to use broadcast variable to propagate this change to each of tasks, and each of tasks uses user-defined function to apply this rule. And the last way is to use data frame instead of broadcast variable and use join for filtering and matching. The table on the slide is the aggregated result on the task, and we found that there is no silver bullet for this. Using data frame with update changes only option shows fastest record among test results. This might be because this approach reduces serialization and deserialization time as well as communication time. We tested with the assumption that we have totally 1 million number of rules, and usually 1%, less than 1% of the rules are changing. For alarm detection, using data frame or broadcast variable shows faster result than direct Redis success approach. But we also found that retrieving data directly from Redis does not affect it by the size of our original rule set. While propagation through data frame or broadcast shows longer propagation time as the size of the rule set increases. We are still on our way to implement this, but I share this for your information. And the third issue is to find the best way to implement event detection. From the beginning of this project, instead of tightly coupling real-time processing engine with our user interface, we plan to build a generalized monitoring server that can be integrated with any other systems. So we thought about event detection much. Event detection is kind of work to check whether those servers are in some situation based on collected data. So the question that how we can implement event detection can be converted to four questions, I think. The first one is what type of event patterns will be supported, and the second one is how to organize collected data, and the third one is which tool is best for checking event conditions, and the first one is how to express checking conditions for storing and sharing. So I think the first question is related to the third one, and if we can find the best tool for checking event condition, we also can find a way to express condition based on the tool selected. So we selected Spring Expression Language as our tool for this. Until now, there was no complex requirement for event detection for us. All of them are checking for a single target and not for the group of servers or clusters. For metrics, a simple threshold check is the most frequently used pattern, and sometimes this pattern is accompanying condition to check how long target is satisfying threshold condition, like 1 minute or 3 times or so. In case of log, checking for text string or regular expression is most frequently used pattern. Surely there are requirements to check count of occurrence during a specified time. Also, there are requirements like checking whether specific metric is increasing or decreasing. So here's our code for event detection. This code is a AI extractor, but we can feel those trend is changing. Now we can easily see data centers running some kind of software clusters, and they have more complicated condition to check. We receive many requirements from an infrastructure operation department to monitor OpenStack or Kubernetes clusters this year. And if we see details of those requirements, we could find many correlation alarm requirements like series of event check or aggregation of status check. Those correlation alarm are usually impossible to or difficult to express in SPEL, so we are redesigning our alarm checking system to cover those complex conditions, and the difference with current implementation is instead of using SPEL to describe alarm itself, we use a list of events to describe alarm internally and separate event check stage from alarm check stage so that disaggregation and other functions on multiple targets can be calculated with result and event check. And we are moving to structured streaming. Yeah. Oh, I think I'm really lag of time. And we completed real-time data processing flow section, and now I'll share about storing and queuing time series data. Our data, we can see we are dealing with five types of data, and the first one is a metric data, which you can see easily on this kind of system, and log data as well. And there are some types of data like labels and value list. Value list means the data is one of the predefined list of the values, and object as well, like a JMS object, and asset information like hardware information. Those are periodically updated from the agent. We are using OpenTSDB with HBase backend as a time series data store. And OpenTSDB itself was started at 2010, and current stable version is 2.3. It started to support Cassandra backend from 2.3, but we are still with HBase backend. and supports HTTP API and Telnet API as well as Java API. So the issues we faced was during the implementation of our solution with regarding OpenTSDB is as follows. The first one is a slow operation on data, so affects real-time processing. I mentioned that there were four types of APIs which OpenTSDB provides, and we tested three of them: import CL command line interface, and HTTP API, and Java API. With input command line interface, streaming application syncs to the file per micro batch, and we set input command line interface. We implemented that some batch process learn import command line interface to load those files to bulk load the data. And the second API we tested was HTTP API, and means that streaming application syncs to OpenTSDB through HTTP API directly. And Java API means we used Java class provided by OpenTSDB directly from streaming application. And there was a pros and cons of each of the API, so we decided to use Java API. But at the beginning of the implementation, we thought that Java API is a lightweight API, and it's kind of a wrapping API that calls OpenTSDB server process, and actually we thought that they are calling HTTP API also, provided by OpenTSDB, and that was actually our mistake. We checked later to know what Java API, I mean TSDB class is exactly is, and found that this class is kind of class that performs many server jobs of OpenTSDB server and directly communicate with HBase backend. So if you implement OpenTSDB with a Java interface, it means that you don't need to run OpenTSDB server process at all. So our implementation based on the assumption that the Java API is a lightweight wrapper delivers us a huge problem, because our task launched created TSDB class instances every time the task launched, and it gave us huge system load as well as longer execution time, because some of the instances need to run server jobs like OpenTSDB compaction and append jobs, which should be performed by OpenTSDB server process. And we should change our architecture to fix this problem. And the second issue we faced with is strange aggregation result and the data. We found that the aggregated result provided by OpenTSDB was different from the aggregation result calculated directly from our data scientists. And the problem was originated from the fact that OpenTSDB has some logic to calculate the start point of time bucket, but it does not consider the time zone difference. And so I'm living in GMT plus 9 time zone, and it means that we have different epoch for the 0 a.m. With the epoch of the 0 a.m. at GMT plus 0 time zone, right? So there was a symptom like the start point of the time bucket was shifted by the size of time zone difference. So the result was the difference on this chart. So you can easily see the daily maximum of row value is larger than the aggregated result of the value, which you can see on the lower side of the chart. And actually, we thought that first we misimplemented the part of our application to generate query, but after we found this problem and other slow activity of OpenTS DB development community, we thought that we should consider about changing our time series backend database. And this is a section for the analytics and real-time inferencing part, and we are working on metrics analytics as well as log analytics, and we are working on real-time inferencing part as well. In case of metrics analysis, the goal of our metrics analysis is predictive maintenance and resource engineering, and the other is to decrease force alarm. We are using statistical approaches as well as deep learning approaches like RSTM on our system metrics, but still we couldn't find the general model for all of the data centers or type of networks. And in case of log analysis, we are approaching with clustering, and instead of setting some kind of regular expressions like a traditional way, like they are using for in a traditional way, we define some kind of distance functions for clustering distance to calculate the distance between logs, and if the distance is less than our predefined distance, then put the log to the one of the clusters or create a new cluster. And we see the count of the trend of number of change of the number of clusters in the log, so that if some log cluster shows a rapid increment or decrement of the some pattern of logs, then we thought that there are some type of abnormal situation. And this is our analytics platform, and the left side of this platform is for the data scientists who are dealing with data and usually used for data exploration as well as training and developing a statistical or deep learning models. And the right side is the part for we are applying our developed model to our running platform for real-time inferencing. Okay, so here's our lessons learned. I actually removed all technical lessons learned from the slide because I think all of you don't need them at all. Actually, I guess most of you have better technical skills, knowledge, and experience than I am, I guess. And just one thing I want to emphasize that development is just the beginning of a long journey, and as DevOps becomes one of the major trends for developing and running services, we also should take care of our optimization of solutions on production environment with real data. And thank you. Okay.